Greetings to each of you in Jesus' name. I do count it a privilege to be here and see where y'all gather Sunday to Sunday and reach out to the community here and wish God's blessing on you, God's richest blessing on your sacrifice and efforts. The Sunday school lesson, I was thinking about that little book, The Pineapple Story. Are you familiar with that book? I was going to say, if you haven't read that, read that story. As we're talking about Isaac and his wells and our rights, what we stand up for, and how often that tends to defeat the purposes that so often we try to accomplish. Truly understand what God's purposes are instead of our purposes. For a message, I invite you to Matthew chapter 18. Matthew 18. We have the disciples asking a question, and I wasn't thinking about this necessarily as a New Year's message, but I think of how that it can apply. In fact, it fits fairly well. What are our goals in life? Who are we trying to be? And as the disciples ask this question, I believe that you and I too often ask this question, and too often we look the wrong direction to find the answer. But let's read verse 1. Matthew 18, verse 1. At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Let's stop reading there for a little bit. Who is the greatest? As you think of that, if we're going to have a contest this morning to find out who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, what would you start to think about? Where would you start to look? What is your value system? Who is the greatest? Who will it be? The president? A genius? A smart man? Someone like Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, or Bill Gates, who developed and dreamed up Microsoft? Or maybe it's the Pope, a religious figure. He is the greatest. Or it's some gifted artist, has unique talent in music or with painting. Is he the greatest? Where will we find the greatest? Jesus turned and did the least expected thing. And I don't know, you can fill in the blank. Who is greatest in your life? But Jesus turned and did the least expected thing. He didn't bring up some philosopher's name or some wise person. It's just another evidence of the upside-down kingdom of God. We'll keep reading here, verses 2 through 6. And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them and said, "Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. But whoso shall receive one such little child in my name, receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea." For a message title, I would just like to have the words, "In Praise of Children, In Praise of Children." Several other titles I thought about were True Greatness, or Lessons from Little Children, but In Praise of Children is the message title. In Praise of Children. Children are a tremendous blessing to our lives. And too often we push them aside and say, "Well, you got a lot of things to learn in life, and we need to help you grow up." And too often we push them aside. But we see what Jesus did. He called the little child and sat him on his knee and said, "Learn from this little child." Too often we think that children need to be taught. There are so many things they need to unlearn. There are so many things that they need to grow in. And it's true that children need trained and children need taught. That's a biblical concept as well. But Jesus taught us that there's a lot of things that adults can learn from little children. A lot of things that we as adults have learned that we must unlearn. We must cast aside. Jesus taught that there are things that we must learn to imitate little children. Well, I'd like to look at a few of those things. I believe that two of them are pretty obvious in this story, and I'd also like to bring out several more from things that I've seen in my children over the years, things that I want to learn from them, and I'll simply share them with you. We're going to look at 10 things rather rapidly, spend a little more time on the first few, and move through the rest more quickly. What can I learn from little children? What did Jesus teach us to learn? Jesus, as he lifted up this little child, he taught them in verse 4 that whosoever shall humble himself, humility. Little children teach us humility. Who was asking the question, who is the greatest? Who was asking that question? It was the grown-ups, the carnal disciples. And I know that it might depend what age of a child you look at. How old was this little child? I don't know. You could imagine that he was a 2 or 3 year old. Maybe it was older than that. But he says a little child. As we think of older children tend to probably get into more, they grow up and the cuteness turns into ugliness. Here he picked up, it does say a little child, if you want to look at the category, the age. A little child, a young child. Little children don't think about who the greatest person is. That's not their goal. You know, you and I, we can walk into the circle of brothers here this morning and we can look around and say, well, I wonder who the greatest person here is. And it depends on your value system. You can look at the wealth. You can look at the wisdom. You can look at the experience somebody has. You know, in other cultures, they really reverence the gray hair. And too often in America, we say, well, you get old, you're not worth anything, and you push the age off to the side. It's a false value system. Who is the greatest? Go back to that question. Does it matter as much as we think it does? The disciples were intent. They took this, they argue about it themselves, and then they took this thing to Jesus. Jesus, who is the greatest? We need the answer. My question is, does it really matter? Does it matter as much as we think it does? Why do we attempt to give people a perceived value and then place all the different people on a sliding scale? He's the greatest and he's the least. And then to figure out if he's the greatest, how can I prove that I'm better yet than he is? That I'm higher, that I'm superior? Too often that comes into our interpersonal relationships and it brings the strife like we were studying about this morning in Sunday school. People spend thousands of dollars to stay ahead of other people. Pride and prejudice are learned. Children at a young age do not separate between the lowly and elite. And one of the illustrations of this is you go back to the slavery days, and the children, no matter of the race or color, could play together until a certain age, or until the parents came and taught them that, you know what, you're different than this other colored race. And today I believe that many friendships are hindered or stopped by the perceived social lines of pride and prejudice put in place by parents and learned by children. I don't know if you face any of that here or not. You probably do somewhere. You know, the children come home from school and say, I can't wear this anymore. Well, why not? Well, my friends, I don't think, you know, they won't like it. How much of that is learned because of parents pushing it on their children? Sometimes, you know, we look at that and say, well, you know what? It really is. It's the values Children didn't just learn this. It's the parents that taught them this. They don't feel accepted because the children carry the parents' values. May we accept and value everyone, regardless of their race, color, regardless of how they're made and their preferences. That we would truly love and accept everybody in humility. Well, there's a lot of other things that we could go on to talk about humility and how it affects our thinking and our relationships, but I think we're going to move on. The second thing that I see here in this little child, it says here that Jesus called the little child, and then what happened? You know, the little fella jumped up and scampered out of there. He ran around the corner, so Peter and Andrew jumped up and chased him into the next room until they got him in a corner and they caught him and they brought him screaming and kicking to Jesus, and he held him tight till he calmed down, and then they could talk again and Jesus taught him a lesson. Is that what happened? No. Jesus called to him the little child, and it doesn't say that there was a big ruckus. And so we see that we have this thought of obedience. Little children can teach us obedience. Children can teach us prompt and unquestioning obedience. You know, when dad says something, that's the way it is, at least at a certain age. Then there comes a time when they start to question. And I'm not saying, I believe there is a time to explain what we believe and all of that and why we're asking them to do what they're doing. But when Jesus calls to us, what is our response? Son, I want you to go and talk to the neighbor about me. I want you to do this or to do that. What's our response? Why? I can't now. It doesn't suit. I'm busy. There's other things to do. What's your response when Jesus calls? Do you come? Or do you say, I can't do this? True obedience is prompt and unquestioning. And I believe that the children, at least the little children, they see us as their authority and they accept that. They say, you know what? Why am I doing this? It's because Dad said so. Dad called, and so I will go. What about our obedience? Children teach us obedience. Another one is faith and trust. They kind of go together. Faith and trust. I had to think of many years ago. I think it was dry, and we were talking about how that we need rain for the garden and the farms around us. And later that day, I don't remember exactly when we were talking about it, but I distinctly remember one of the boys coming to me and saying, Dad, it's going to rain. And I said, what makes you think that? Why do you think it's going to rain? He said, because I prayed about it, and God's going to send us rain. And he was that settled on this is what was going to happen. He was sure that God was going to answer his prayer. And for me, I wasn't as convinced as he was, you know. But it did rain. I don't remember exactly when. But what impressed me was that he had prayed and the issue was settled. It's the simple faith, the simple trust. You know, his thought was, Dad, we don't have to worry about it anymore. God's going to take care of it. You know, often we as parents, we teach them to pray. We teach them to have faith, and then we struggle. They have it, and we still struggle. You know how it is? I need more of that kind of faith. The thing that's causing us sleepless nights, that's causing us upset stomachs, and we worry, and you know, what about this and what about that? Maybe you don't sweat the details like that. You know, the things that you worry about, just to give it to God and then let it go. Let it go. Don't worry about it. Now, it is true that trust makes them vulnerable in a sense, and maybe just a challenge to you as parents. There's a lot of things that you can take advantage of that trust. You can fill their minds with a lot of untruth. You can use their gullible, easy belief. You can tell them that it's Santa Claus that gives them their gifts. You can teach them a lot of other foolish things, but someday they'll grow up and realize somebody took advantage of me. What a shame. But I'm thankful this morning that our trust in God is never betrayed like that. If we give God our trust and our faith, He won't abuse it. He will be faithful. Let's have more faith and trust in God. What else? We see that children are teachable. We know that. Children are teachable. Why? Because children have a lot to learn. Children are teachable. What about you and I? I see some gray hair here today. Have you learned it all? Are you still teachable? Am I still teachable? You know, children know they have a lot to learn. They know that they don't know much, and so they learn. They try to learn. You know, you and I, we think, well, you know what? I've learned a lot, and I know a lot, and so I don't have much to learn. Is that the proper conclusion? No, I believe if we're honest, we'll agree that we all have a lot to learn, and that even we as older people, or we like to say you as older people, everybody, me and younger is young, and old as me and older than me is old, right? It's the way we think. And that goes with you, I think, mostly till the end of life. Do we remember that we have a lot to learn? It's an interesting verse in Ecclesiastes 4:13. It goes like this: better is a poor and a wise child than an old and foolish king who will no more be admonished. You know, I think it kind of goes with us as we grow up. We think, well, you know what? I know a lot, and I don't need you telling me how to think, what to do. I don't need correction. I'm old. But it says that a poor and wise child is better than an old and foolish king. You know, you weigh that out in your mind, you would think that he would say an old king is better than a child. You know, how are we going to weigh that out? But no, it's better to be a wise child than an old and foolish king. Somebody who will not take any sort of teaching. You know, we get set in our ways and hardened that we can no longer be taught. Oh, to be young and teachable, or at least teachable if we can't be young, right? Oh, to be teachable. The other week, we were visiting my brother-in-law, and my nephew had this T-shirt on that said, I learned everything I know from my dad, something to that effect. Everything I know, I learned from my dad. And that's all great and good till he started. There was a banister, something like this, a little different. It was iron. Next thing you know, he was hanging halfway out over it. Looked like he was getting ready to break his neck. And, you know, we want to take credit as parents for things that we taught that were right. But when they do something that they shouldn't do, that was from somewhere else. But anyway, let's teach our children what they need to know, and let's be teachable. What else can we learn? One of the things that impresses me, especially about my young children, is how they give. Giving. Children teach us the joys of generous giving. You know, it's pretty often that when my little children get a little treat, maybe it's a pack of Smarties, or maybe it's some other sort of candy, that they come around and they got to give everybody a little piece. The other night we sat down for supper and there was a little piece of candy on everybody's plate, part of a piece of candy. I think it was a longer piece of candy, and they had cut it up into little pieces and shared it with everybody else. And that happens pretty often. They just do it. We don't tell. We often I say, I don't want to take that. you know, here, you enjoy that. And sometimes they'll take it back, and sometimes they'll say, you know what, Dad, you need to take it. I don't want it. Just take it. But, you know, you show children pictures of other starving children, and they'll want to. I remember one time when that happened, and the daughter brought her piggy bank and said, here, just give this. And I thought, well, she's not even being realistic. Give her entire savings toward the needs of somebody. Is that even logical? Do children have logic? I also remember one time one of the boys at church, I think his dad would send him to the cash drawer and tell him to grab a little bit of cash and put it in the offering. And one day they got to church and the offering plate was being passed. And next thing you know, this boy had jumped up and was fumbling in his pocket, and he pulls out a whole wad of cash, and his dad's like a gasp, and he lets it go, and his dad's like, you know, no way. Nobody counted. Who knows how much cash got dropped in the offering that day. But the little fellow, he was having a fun time giving. He wanted to give a lot that day, and the dad never knew how much cash disappeared into the offering. Children love to give. Do they know what it's costing them? And I think that there's a sense where they do know, because they know what candy tastes like, and they can understand that I'm giving and I don't have it, but they find joy in giving. Give it all away, and then I'll be happy. Seems to be their motto. Maybe we can learn something from that. Learning to give. The joy of generous giving. That's what gives them joy. What do I find joy from? Is it the same kind of giving? Or is it in saving it for myself? I believe that we really find joy when we've learned to give. Sixthly, children teach us the freedom of forgiveness. Forgiving. Children are forgiving. You know, it's pretty often that the children are playing and they get into some sort of a fight, or maybe somebody accidentally gets hurt. There's a lot of different things that children suffer at the hand of another. And it's amazing to me that how soon it can go from crying and tears, something bad happened and I'm not happy, to it's all peace again and they're right back together playing again. How quickly it can go from the erupting cries to the chaos is over and we're back to playing together. How much does it take for you and I to forgive? To forget the offense ever occurred? Do we need to hang on to that grudge? Do we need to nurse our hurt? What does it really benefit us any? What does it really benefit us to hang on to that hurt? You know, really in the end, it only hurts me to hang on to that hurt. And yet, how often do we do that? Let's learn from children. Let's be forgiving. What else do children teach us? Children teach us dependence. Dependence. Children teach us the freedom of dependence. You know, they're just glad to have a mom and dad and to be a child and to be dependent. I think of how many years that I wanted to grow up, to gain my independence. Couldn't wait till I was 16. Couldn't wait till I was 18. Couldn't wait till I was 21. The years that I would gain the freedom. And then I got all that freedom and I said, I wish I was a little child. Didn't have this responsibility. I suppose that probably happened to most of you. Remember a young man coming to me and saying, I just wish I was a little child. And he wanted so bad, even though at a young age he had run off from his home and lived in rebellion and all kind of terrible things he got involved in. He just wants, even today, so bad just to go home and live under his mom and dad. Yet he's 20-some years old. And it's not going to work for him to go back because he can't be a little child anymore. When he left, you know, he was a young child. And he wants to go back to living under mom and dad. But he can never get that same kind of dependence back. You know, I think it's the same way in life. I don't know what you might be struggling with by way of wanting your independence. Sometimes it's in by way of church standards. I wish I could set my own rules. I don't need a church. Maybe it's in work. I don't need a boss. Let me go work for myself, do my own thing. Maybe it's in marriage. I don't need my wife telling me what to do. I know how to make my own decisions. I don't need my husband's direction. You know, whatever it is that we're called to be dependent on, God has called us to work together, to have the influence of other people into our lives, and we can say, I don't want that. Children are dependent, and they enjoy it. There's a sense we could say, well, they don't know any different, and that's true. Dependence. What else? Another thing that too often we don't realize we have until it's gone, and that is innocence. Innocence. Children teach us the peace of innocence, the joy and freedom of a clear conscience. Too often we don't realize, like I said, what we had until it's gone. You know what? It looked so good, and I did it. But now I have to deal with my conscience. Oh, to maintain a pure and clear conscience. You know, I'm thankful this morning that we do have Jesus, and there is forgiveness. There's a right way to take care of our sin. But let's maintain the innocence that children have, the joy and freedom of a clear conscience. Well, moving on, ninthly, which is similar, there's more aspects to it, and that is transparency. Children teach us to be transparent. You know, you can look into their faces and you can see what's on their mind a lot of times. You can see if they're happy. You can see if they're sad. And I know that they say we should grow up and not wear our feelings on our shirt sleeve. Or I think I've heard that. You don't have to wear all your feelings on the outside. But I think there's another whole thing that we learn, and that is to hide our feelings. We put up a facade, and you can't tell what I'm thinking. And even in a discussion, I'll argue from one angle, even if I'm over here, I'll come from over here. And then you'll think I'm over here, and then just to keep you confused, I'll come over here. And I'll always keep you guessing, and I put this front up. I'm never real. I'm always hiding. I'm always shifting. You never know where to find me. Now, transparency. This is who I am. This is what I stand for. This is where you can find me. I'm for real. And I'm open. You know, if a child is happy or troubled, it's pretty easy to tell. It shows. You know, as adults, we learn sophistication, and we think sophistication is greatness, right? Be sophisticated, be hard to figure out. I think that children teach us transparency. There's freedom in transparency. And unfortunately, though, in our homes, sometimes, in some homes, and hopefully it's not yours or mine, but children are taught by their parents that you're not supposed to feel. You're not supposed to talk. You're not supposed to be open. And they learn those things. And if you come from a home like that, find freedom. Find somebody you can talk to about it. And be open about what's really inside. And break away the bondage of that facade that you've worked so hard to build. Tear it down because it's not helping anybody. Let's learn the transparency of little children. Tenthly, my last point is adoration. Children teach us adoration. You know, it's enjoyable in the morning to have the little girls run to me and jump up and just give you a hug, or to come home after work and the same thing. They come running, Dad's home, and come running, and if you pick them up, give you a good hard squeeze around the neck and a tight hug. One of my little girls tells me regularly last couple weeks, I like you, Daddy. You're my best daddy. And that's the way she puts it. But the kind of adoration that they have, do I have that same kind of adoration for our Heavenly Father? For God and what He does for us. God, I love you. Thank you so much for caring enough to send Jesus. Thank you so much for what you did for me today. Maybe it's the simple things like the sunshine or to smell a rose, enjoy some sort of a flower. Or the many other spiritual things. Children teach us adoration, to just adore Him for what He is. Or we could take that to relationships and other people. How do I treat other people? Do I give them compliments? You know what? You did a good job. Thank you so much for the effort you put into that. Thank you for how you helped me. To be quick to talk about and to thank other people for what they've done. Or is it, who's the greatest? I'm the greatest. Think about what I did. Tell my story. Do we freely give compliments? You know, I've heard the theory that from maybe a teacher in school that wouldn't give pluses, or from parents who would always hold the bar a little higher. You know, if I would say, Johnny, here, do this. Jump this high. And when he jumps, I just lift the bar. And every time he grows up and achieves a little more, I just lift the bar and lift the bar and lift the bar. Never let him achieve. Never let him accomplish. Parents say, well, if I let him accomplish, then he'll get proud. That's not true. Let him accomplish and praise him, and then set another goal and help him to grow. Help him to realize that he's growing and reward him for it. I believe that when we treat our children the way we should treat them, then they respect us the way they should respect us. I believe that it all goes together, adoration. Well, I had to think back to Solomon. And as when he prayed that, God, I am but a little child. And I know that all that happened in a dream, but I believe that it happened in a dream because that really is what was happening in his heart. And God gave that credence. It was credible. When he prayed, I am but a little child, and he had that attitude, then he was great. But when he became proud, distant, he also became distant from God. And God could no longer bless him the way he did when he was humble. He is a wise man who senses his need and shows him how to grow and mold his heart. I don't know where you are in your journey this morning. I don't know what your goals are for this new year. Will you be great? How will you be great? It's up to you to define it. But first of all, I think we all know that before we can be great, we have to set goals. My question for you this morning is, what are your goals? Where are you getting your pattern for true greatness? Are you allowing Jesus to establish what that pattern is? And then to find greatness His way. Let's kneel for prayer.